Welcome to the Every Day is Saturday podcast, the number one motivation show on the planet.
No more Mondays for you. It's time to make every day Saturday.
Boom! This is the podcast where we help you to accept who you are, not where you are.
On the roller coaster of life, you know we only sit in the front seat, champion. So make sure you are fastened in tight. Let's go!
Tired of feeling run down all the time during the week? We can help you make every day feel like it's a Saturday.
Let's go pack your bags. It's time to leave Averageville.
Introducing the man who thinks abnormal stands for above normal.
When you're on fire, people will travel from miles around to watch you burn, baby. We are fired up.
The host of the Every Day is Saturday show, Sam Crowley.
It's Sam Crowley. Welcome back to the Every Day is Saturday podcast, the longest running motivational show on iTunes. And wow. Got an amazing multi-part interview for you. This one's a couple years old, but I don't think it's available on iTunes anymore because we shifted servers last year. So this one is from the archives. I brought it back out. It's the two-year anniversary that I met a triple murderer who was helping me unload some stuff from my house. Don't worry, wasn't bodies or anything, but craziest damn story ever heard, man. I'll set this up, and then I'm going to go to the interview that I did with Jerry Ballone. Jerry Ballone died 2 years ago as well, about a month after I met him. He died in his sleep. And he and I were going to do some stuff on stage together because he's got a message of, after spending 37 years in the New York State Penitentiary System, he was convicted of a triple murder back in the early 1970s. At the time, the worst murder in the state of New York, certainly the worst the city of Buffalo has ever seen. And we go into that in the interview that you're about to hear. This show is the number one downloaded podcast I've ever had, over 150,000 downloads of the show. And I think it got over 100,000 downloads in the first month because it was so compelling. I was looking for a guy to haul some junk away. I was doing some demo work at my house in Springville, New York, some plaster and lath, had about 18 bags of them. Looked on Craigslist, which I do for a lot of that stuff, and saw a guy that said he had two master's degrees, had a nice shiny truck, a trailer. So I called him right away. It was an ingenious ad and got me to call him, and he was there. He was there on time, and as we're, you know, shooting the breeze a little bit, getting to know each other, I asked him what he does, how long he's been doing it, and next thing you know, he goes into the story about just got out of jail after killing three people, and there you go. You never know what's going to happen when you bring people into your life, man, and you start asking questions, and the world is an interesting place. Everybody's got a story. It's also a world of forgiveness and second and third and fourth chances and repent, and I'll tell you what, all of that is included in this multi-part interview series. We're going to break it up because it's originally a long interview. Probably not. It goes probably an hour and 15 minutes. So here's part one, Jerry Ballone and I. Enjoy.
Hey, everyone. Sam Crowley. Welcome back to the Every Day is Saturday show. Sam Crowley show heard all around the world on iTunes. If you want to log in and listen to all of our archive shows, just go to samcrowleyshow.com. And let me tell you something. Today we have an unbelievable show, a great guest. I'll tell you, it's funny how things happen. And the last show I just did, if you haven't listened to the last show, it talked about how I called to have some debris removed from my home in Springville and ended up meeting a friend of mine and who also happens to be out of prison after 37 years for a triple murder. And let me tell you something. It's an inspiring story, and we're going to get into his story because he's on the line today. I'm going to bring him out in just a second, but it's amazing. You know, you reach out, you connect with people. You're not afraid to meet new people in your life, and it's wild, man. It's just really, really wild. So, hey, without further ado, I've got Jerry Ballone on the line. Jerry, you with me?
Yes, I am.
Hey, Jerry, great to have you on our show today, man. Welcome aboard.
Thank you, and it's an honor to be here.
You know, it's funny. I talked about on the last show, I know you listened to that podcast, and I also sent you a copy of my book. I know you gave me a copy of your book, and we'll get into all that stuff. I mean, we've really gotten to know each other quite a bit just in the past couple weeks. It was 2 weeks ago, Jerry. I was cleaning out that home in Springville, New York. I was doing some demo work and knocking down some plaster and lath, and I called an ad on Craigslist. There was a picture of a bright, shiny black truck with a big shiny trailer in there, which you don't see a lot of that on Craigslist for people that are hauling junk away. Had your name, your phone number on there, and then it said, I have two master's degrees, which, by the way, is a great marketing ploy in your in your Craigslist ad to get jobs. And I'm like, who the hell's got a master's degree hauling junk away? I mean, who would put that in their ad? So I called you. You answered the phone on, like, the first or second ring, and I immediately hired you. It took just about a half hour. I didn't really call anybody else, although I wanted to. I just didn't have time. But I like the fact that you had your picture in your ad, and you were prompt, and you said you'd be there at 8:30 the next day, and the next day you show up 45 minutes early, and I was impressed. But you know what was really wild, man, is when I came down to meet you, we shook hands, and you were already hauling those really heavy bags of plaster. My things had to weigh 100 pounds each into your trailer. And then I asked you, how long have you been doing this? You tell me, well, you know, for a little while here, since I got out of prison, I've been finding odd jobs. And let me tell you, Jerry, there's some icebreakers out there, but when you tell someone you've been in prison immediately, I would imagine, their ears perk up. And then you went on to say that you served 37 years in 17 different prisons for a triple murder that was committed back in Buffalo. So I'll tell you, man, we got a lot to talk about today, but I got to tell you, man, when we met in Springville a couple weeks ago, after you left and we were talking, I was like, what the hell just happened? I bet you get that a lot from people.
Yeah, I do. But, people accept it, because I made a promise when I got out of prison that I would never hide from my past. It is what it is, and I try to use it to inspire others that no matter where they are and no matter what they're doing, they can take control of their lives, as I've done. My struggles have been extremely bad since I got out of prison. I mean, when I first got out, I came out with two master's degrees, and I kind of thought, unlike most prisoners, that people would be willing to hire me, would overlook my crime and my long incarceration. So I'd go, and I probably filled out over 200 resumes, and absolutely nobody hired me. And I, human resource managers would always say, Jerry, you're exactly what we could use and what we want, but the powers that be, we could never explain to the public or to others why we hired a multiple murderer. And it was disappointing. I ended up getting one job working in a rehab, but as you write in your book how unsatisfied you were, I worked there for 2.5 years. I was only a part-timer. I worked 48 hours a week, was never late, put in all the overtime, did everything, but I was unhappy. They made all the clients feel as if they were victims. There was no accountability for their relapse and just everything about it. And eventually my parole officer made me quit the job because too many ex-convicts were going there. And I went on unemployment for a couple of months, and then I said, what am I going to do with myself? It's either go and live in the shelter. So I ended up thinking, wow, Buffalo, we get a lot of snow and things like that. So I went to look at a snowplow, and I was going to look for something secondhand because I didn't have any money in the bank and I didn't have a job. And I went to this car dealership, and everything I wanted had like 50,000 miles on it, and they wanted 30,000. And I was just getting ready to walk out of the place, and I said, by the way, what's the best truck you have in here? And they ended up showing me a 2012 Toyota Tundra, and I went and sat in it and everything else. And I said, wow, I would love to have something like this. He said, well, why don't you get it? I said, well, my financial situation isn't that good. He said, well, let me do a credit check on you anyway. He came back 10 minutes later, told me that my credit score was 763 and that I could have anything in the showroom. I said, you got to be kidding. And it was so unbelievable. Sam, I just couldn't believe it. I said, you got to be kidding me. He said, nope, your credit score. The bottom line is if you don't pay your bills, we'll come get it. So he says, what do you want? I says, I'll take this truck. He said, what do you want on it? I says, load it up. I want everything that you could possibly have on it. Hands-free driving, automatic starter, cushioning in the back. I mean, I loaded it up. My payments were $650. I got a plow, a $5,000 plow put on the front of it. I did everything. I just said, well, if they're going to take it, they're going to take it. At least I'll have it for a minute. But and a couple days later, I drove off that lot, and, everybody says, what, are you crazy? How are you going to afford it? How are you going to do this? I said, don't you worry about me. I'm going to make the payments. And I've done it so far, and You know, and when I got out of prison, I couldn't even get a cell phone. I had no credit because I had never worked a day in my life. And I was 55 years old when I got out. So I just learned. And that's one of the things I learned when I took one of my courses in college, that if you pay your bills, always pay your bills, no matter what, you get that credit score up there. And you can pretty much, and, you know, you almost don't want to believe it. But here it is that I was penniless. My credit cards were maxed out, everything. And here it is, I'm driving off the lot with a brand-new $47,000 truck.
Yeah, that's, see, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, right? I mean, but you didn't know what you didn't know. Did you even know, and I don't want to sound, because I don't know how much you know or don't know. You mean, you were in prison 37 years, and a lot changed. Presidents changed. I mean, we didn't even have computers, iPads, iPods, Macs, Apples, you know, PCs, all that stuff weren't even around when you went to prison, but did you even know what a credit score was? Did you know that you had the ability to go out there and start buying some stuff now?
Not in credit, really. I didn't, you know, college, I took business courses and that, but that's all general stuff. But it never really, I never in my wildest dreams never ever believed that I could do something like that, get a brand new truck and all that. And, you know, and but it's, I've learned a lot since then. After that, I found out that I could also, I went to another place, to another bank. They gave me a loan for $7,500 to get a dumpster trailer. Then I went to Home Depot, and they gave me $5,000 credit to get tools. And, you know, all I got to do is pay a little bit back every month, and I got my own business now. I don't want to be on welfare. I don't want no handouts. I don't want nothing from anybody. I want to work. And the thing is that now I have my own business. Kind of tough. Usually in Buffalo, we have a lot of snow. This year, I've only used my plow about four or five times, so it kind of, like, set me back. So I'm pinching pennies, but it's all right. Come spring, I'll be working 7 days a week, 18 hours a day.
Yeah. No, I mean, credit's like a loaded weapon. I mean, it can be used for good, really good stuff. I mean, a lot of businesses get started, and it can bury people and can be used for not so good either. Hey, speaking of, you know, loaded weapons, let's get into your story because I think it's really amazing. You know, and we're not trying to glorify what you've done, and we always want to respect the victims and their families. It's not about that. It's about really the title of your book, Rising from the Ashes. So, you know, your story, Jerry, you, to say that you weren't born with a silver spoon in your mouth would be, you know, the height of understatement. I mean, you were abandoned at birth. You spent most of your life in foster homes, orphanages, detention centers, reform schools, and then really off to prison for your involvement in a robbery and that went bad, a burglary that went bad. It turned into three people being killed. So give us an idea. Take us back to Buffalo on the east side back in the 60s, 50s and 60s when you were growing up. What was it like growing up as Jerry Ballone that period of time?
Well, I've been pretty much a product of the system since the time of my birth. My mother was a very beautiful woman, but she was also an alcoholic. Whenever she drank, she would go to a bar, and, you know, whoever bought her the most drinks could take her home and do what they wanted to do with her. She ended up having six children with five different men, and at the time of my birth, she probably didn't even know who my father was. So she left me in the hospital. I went to Our Lady of Victory Infant Home for Children, and then through a succession of foster homes. And my thing is that when they would put me in these foster homes, I didn't bond with anybody or anything. So I was always running away, and they'd catch me and put me in another foster home. And, you know, and the punishments just got worse and worse. And my first arrest occurred at the age of eight. And when I went to this place called East Ferry, it's a juvenile detention center. At the age of eight, I was asked to count to 10, and I was asked to do my ABCs. And since I couldn't do my ABCs or count to 10, I was diagnosed as being mentally retarded. And every time I would get rearrested, I was arrested 15 times by the time I was 16, they would classify me, put a new clinical diagnosis on me, and I had every label that one could possibly have. So I felt I had to live up to those labels. What does a retard do? What does a maniac do? What does a hoodlum do? What does this do? And everything that I did just to do it. And what they would do back then, they felt that they could change my behavior by beating me. I received probably hundreds of beatings as a child from teachers, from counselors, from priests, from nuns, from foster parents. The very people who were entrusted to take care of me turned out to be the biggest bullies and the biggest abusers in my life. And as they used to beat me, I used to always say to myself and tell them that someday I'm going to become big and strong enough where nobody's ever going to put their hands on me ever again. I ended up joining a gang called the Savage Ones. And part of being in almost any gang is that you have to adhere to certain principles. We had a code in our gang that if anybody disrespected us or did anything to us in any form or fashion, we had to retaliate. And that was the life that I lived. The nature of my crime, my crime really stemmed from something else. I had gotten jumped a couple days earlier by seven people, and I was looking for them because I wanted to get them. So I was in this mood. I just wanted to kill somebody and do something. So I ended up taking my anger out on three innocent people who had nothing to do with what I was really trying to do that night.
So as far as, you know, what you described leading up to that, there really wasn't any other option. I mean, and I'm not here to make excuses, and I know you're not making excuses for what you did, but you were destined to go to prison for your it sounds to me what you just described, there was no way you're going to be going to a regular 9-to-5 job and functioning as a normal human in society. That just doesn't sound like that was ever going to be your destiny.
I never wanted to. During one of my early evaluations when I was a young child, I was about 9 years old, they asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up. By then, I had told them that I wanted to be a killer and a gangster. And they put that in a profile, and it's something that I pretty much had to deal with the rest of my life, because anything you say, they ended up monitoring and logging it. And I lived up to that. I always tell people I went to prison as a killer, and while in prison, I became a gangster. I got involved in all kinds of criminal activities in there. Loan sharking, gambling, extortion, drug dealing, whatever was illegal. I mean, I liked prison. Prison was my home. When I went to prison, it was almost like in prison I became somebody. Out here in the free world, all I was a hoodlum, a gangster, a savage one, all these negatives. Whereas in prison, I was respected because I was a killer and everything else, but I became a good criminal in there. I was a better criminal in prison than I was out here. And I had people working for me, and I embraced it, and, you know, it was all right. I mean, I did many years in solitary confinement. They would send me to all these different prisons thinking that it would change my behavior, but it never worked. Because I became what I always wanted to be.
What was that mean? What's that mean? You became a good criminal. What were you, running your own show in there or something?
It's like anywhere else. You learn how to, you know, you just learn how to do things, you know. And I had mentors in there, you know. When I first went to prison, I hung out with a bunch of old timers, and they, you know, they were all criminals, and they would teach me the ways of prison life. If you want to get this, you got to do that. This is how you do this. This is how you do that. If somebody borrows two packs of cigarettes from you, they got to give you three back. If they don't, you got to beat them down in a stairwell. All these different things. And again, after they were my mentors, but I became better than them. I eventually, you know, I learned how to gamble. I learned how to do football tickets, everything. I mean, I could make things happen. I became good at it.
How do you do that, like, in prison? All right, so here's a really stupid question from a really naive guy, because I've never been to prison. So, to me, you're incarcerated, you've got guards everywhere, and you've got little freedom. How do you run drugs and gambling? I mean, it sounds like Vegas. I mean, I'm not saying Vegas is full of drugs and gambling. I'm just saying that it sounds like a cross between Vegas and some sort of alleyway, but yet, isn't it? Aren't there guards everywhere? How do you pull all this stuff off doing business in prison?
There are rules. You know, drug trafficking is against the rules. Gambling is against the rules. They got hundreds of rules. But you're talking about career criminals who go to prison. They make $3 a week. They're always trying to find out how to supplement that income. So if you work in a mess hall, Your thing is, if you can steal a case of chickens out of the mess hall, you need to find somebody like me who'll take the whole case of chickens, and then I'll give them to somebody else to cook them. The gambling, you're allowed to play cards, you're allowed to play chess, you're allowed to watch and listen to radio stations and do a lot of different things. But, you know, the guards' main priority is to keep people from committing violence against each other, from trying to escape. They call it about care, custody, and control. They don't really care. I mean, why do they care? When I first went to prison, forget about it. It was like Dodge City. I mean, you could do whatever you want to anybody. I mean, you only get a couple of weeks in solitary. Eventually, the laws have changed and things like that. But, I mean, I thrived in that environment. I mean, I became pretty good at it. I became good with numbers, and I said, wow, it's I didn't want any. You have to remember, I went to prison with a double life sentence. I was told that there was no chance of me ever getting out. So there was no reason for me to be good. If you went to prison, you were only doing 5 years, you want to get out as soon as possible. You don't want to get caught up in drugs or anything else. Your thing is, do your time and get out. Whereas someone like me, who said he was never getting out, rules didn't apply to me. It almost felt like a godlike in a way, because I could do whatever I wanted to do. Solitary never bothered me. That was really my only refuge, going there. So I was all right. I mean, it was, and I embraced it. I learned the prison culture. I survived. I always tell people, when you look at my body, all the scars that I have on my body all came from when I was a child. None of them from in prison, because, you know, in prison you got an image to uphold and you got to represent.
Wow. So I read in your book, which is a great read, it's called Rising from the Ashes by Jerry Bologne, and it's his life as a killer, a convict who survived 37 years in 17 prisons, and a man who beat the odds. It's a great book. You know, Jerry, I read one of the very first parts of the book is you got sent away to prison after your sentence, after your crime, you were sentenced, and your very first day, and I'm trying to recall, I'm going to just paraphrase, that you had some sort of weapon tucked away because you wanted to make a statement. You're going away with two life sentences. You were going to kill somebody your very first day in prison. Is that right, to make a statement?
And that seems like a pretty good place to leave off for today's show. Check back on the next podcast, part two of my Jerry Bologne interview, where we start right there, where his very first day in prison, in the penitentiary, he had a weapon, and he was just about ready to kill somebody, and then it changed a little bit. So stay tuned. See you in part two. Sam Crowley, have the best day ever!
Thank you for listening to the Every Day is Saturday podcast. Still fired up and want more of Sam Crowley? Be sure to visit everydayissaturday.com. And don't forget to follow Sam on Twitter at Sam Crowley. Let Sam know you're listening. Use hashtag Every Day is Saturday.